to be two.
You're right. What page are we in?
Masechet Sanhedrin.
Uh-huh.
Daf Tet Amud Bet 29b. Learning the laws of witnesses. What happens when a witness witnesses an event? Talking about a civil event, not a capital crime, not a criminal event. Can he be a witness? So it depends. He's not automatically a witness. The Ikar, the general rule is that he needs to be appointed as a witness, not just someone who happened to be there. So once we learn that rule, the Gemara moved forward to now learn additional rules about witnesses. In the specific case of witness to a loan, can witnesses to a loan draw up a document evidencing the loan? Are they allowed to?
If the debtor appoints them.
So that's the criteria we have to know, because we might have thought, of course they can do what they like. If they want to draw up a document, they can draw up a document. But the Gemara tells us that it's not a valid document, meaning it won't bind the debtor unless... Well, so we're going to see now. We're going to ask you now what the rules are. What rules do you need in order to bind the debtor to that document? Because the document adds on additional obligations. Two additional obligations, principally, that are added on to the debtor because of the document, the existence of the document. One is that it creates a lien over his property, so that if he gets rid of that property, the lender can call it back from a third party. The second reason is because it's prima facie evidence that the debt hasn't been repaid. While the document still exists, it's prima facie evidence that the debt has not been paid, because when a debt is paid, normally the document is given over in receipt of the money. So,
now I was confused, because the impression I got was the witness can simply take notes, as in, yes, something happened,
okay,
but not as, not necessarily as a legal document unless they're appointed by the debtor.
Okay, so what are you telling me? You're telling me you're confused, or telling me you understood it and that's the conclusion?
Well, I'm confused.
So what's confusing you?
Because if the witnesses are appointed by the lender, then any documents they sign with a Kenyan is legally binding. Whereas if it's not without a Kenyan, and they're simply taking notes and they haven't been appointed by the lender, then the notes could be used for like jogging the memory or something like that.
Okay, so why are you confused?
Is it accurate?
What you just said?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yes.
Okay.
Okay. So we came to 29B, Kaf Tet, Amud Bet, middle of the page. And the Gemara now wants to know what happens if a Kenyan is made by the two principals, the lender and the borrower. Does that change? Does that make a difference to the standing of the witnesses? Let's go from there. Odav ifnei shnayim akanu miyado. If a person admitted in front of two other people and he also had a Kenyan, what's the rule? Kotvin. Bimlav ain't kotvin. They are allowed to make a note. They do write. If a Kenyan is made, then the two witnesses who write up a record of the transaction, that document is now valid and binding. Because a Kenyan was made, therefore we expect that the transaction was serious. the principals meant what they said. When they one said, you owe me the money, the other said, yeah, I agree, let's make a kinyan on it. They made a kinyan. That's intended to be binding. No one can get out of it by saying they were joking. Next, bifnei shlosha. What about in case of three? If two needs a kinyan, what about three? Does three also need a kinyan? So, machloket. Rava ma kotvin, Rav Asi amayin kotvin. Rav says, you can have three people, even without a kinyan, and that's good enough. Rav Asi says, no, there's no difference between two or three. You need a kinyan. Hava uvda, there was an incident. Chashla Rav laha Rav Asi. There was an incident where Rav, although Rav said, you didn't need a kinyan, he went with Rav Asi. Didn't allow the document to stand without the kinyan. Amar Rav Adaba Hava Ha Odita. This note, this Odita, this admission. Zimnim Katbinim, but Zimnim Lo Katbinim. Sometimes we write and sometimes we don't write. So when do we write and when do we not write? Kanife v'yatve lo kativan. If they three people were gathered together, they were sitting there, we don't write. Kan fin hu ihu katvina. But if he gathered them together, the three people, then we do write.
And we're the debtor.
The debtor in this case. So we just said that three people by themselves, without a kinyan, Machoket, Rav and Rav Asi.
Because you could assume that three people could be, theoretically, a bistin.
Right. Although this, tough. This goes according to the opinion of Rav, who says you don't write. Rav Asi doesn't need the gathering, apparently. Although it's not clear. Maybe even according to Rav Asi. This could be an additional Gemara. Tov, in either event. So what's the difference? So the difference is whether or not the debtor appointed them, he gathered them together. If he gathered them together specifically, then we can assume they were intended to be witnesses. Right, we're going on, what's the intention here? What's the intention of the parties? Can one of the parties say he didn't intend them to be witnesses? If he gathered them together, so we can't say he didn't intend it. Rav Amar, but Rav says no. Afilu kanfinhu, ihu lo kabinan. Even if he did gather them together, himself, the debtor, Rav says that's not enough. Add until the amaluhu havu alai tiyani. Until he said to them, you are going to be witnesses for me. Rav says you actually need to say, you can't just gather them together and assume that everybody understands that they're being witnesses in a Beit Din. Or not even witnesses, they're now going from witnesses to a Beit Din. There's a difference. We switched mid-sugya. Before when we were talking about two, we were talking about witnesses. Now when we're talking about three, we've gone from being witnesses to becoming a Beit Din. You're with it, you're doing it. Right? So we're now talking about a Beit Din, which is different than being a witness. These are actually judges. Right? They're deciding the case there and then.
And given it's monetary, dealing with loans, yes, you can basically use anyone.
According to what we learned in the beginning of the Masechet, right? So Rava says not unless you say you be the judges. Ma Rav Asi says even further. Even if he did tell them, he gathered them together and he told them, you guys are going to be the judges. It's not enough. Lo kafinan. We don't write a shtar. We don't write a note admitting that the debt's been created. Ad tekave duchta. B'shalchu mezamne le'vedina. Until they establish a dukhta, a seat, like a presence, a place of the Beit Din. Shalchu mazamne lei levedina, and they send him and invite him, they send him a summons to come to the Beit Din, to appear in court. Right, so these three people who you say you be my judges doesn't create a Beit Din according to the last opinion, Ma'abar Ravashi, unless we actually formally create a Beit Din and say this is the place of the Beit Din, and we send someone with a summons. Now it's officially a Beit Din. But just gathering three people together is not enough, he says, to make an impromptu Beit Din on the spot.
Now, why do they need to summon them when they're already there? And also, again, this simply be a verbal summons.
I think because otherwise there's an argument that you didn't realize that these people were Beit Din. If you go back on each step is, so you've got three people sitting together. Did you know they were a Beit Din? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Okay, you gathered them together specifically. Maybe now there's more evidence than you made a Beit Din. Right, yeah, but did you actually say they were a Beit Din? Okay, now you said they were, you're going to be my judges. So now you said that they're judges. Doesn't necessarily, it's a Beit Din. You just said they were going to be judges. So maybe there's still room for doubt. So the last opinion is, no, there's still room for doubt unless they actually have a fixed seat that this is the court, right here is the courtroom, and you've been invited to the courtroom to sit and have a judgment. Then no one can argue. Because at each stage before that, you can say, well, fine, I knew they were judges, but I didn't know we were having a judgment at the time. Or I knew they were judges and this is a courtroom, but I didn't know we'd actually started the case.
So then they can verbally summons them, same.
So, but when you do that, then for sure there's no argument. You're now sitting in a courtroom in front of judges and you're now beginning a case. So no one can argue. But up until that point, you could argue that, Tob, I didn't realize that this was actually an official formal thing. I thought we were just, yeah, these are going to be the judges. Yeah, but not, they'll be judges, but not now. This is not really a Beit Din. It's not really a courtroom. We're sitting in a coffee bar. Right? I could argue in theory. So Ma'abar Ravashi says, no, you need no doubt whatsoever that these three are the appointed ones. Then you can write the note. But without that, it's not fair. You can always argue that that wasn't his intention up until that point. The previous two opinions said, no, you don't need to go that far. Okay.
Now, what do they mean by establishing a seat? Can they do it anywhere?
Or does I think so.
Location?
I think they say this is effectively this is the courtroom. They've established the place as the courtroom. Even if it's like, you know, the corner of the coffee pot, this is the seat where we're going to sit. We're going to sit here and judge from here. Okay, everyone good with that? Yep, fine. We've now established the seat. Okay. Next, hadu b'matatale v'kanu miyado. If somebody made an agreement, omitted, in the case of matatalin, what's matatalin?
Movable objects.
Movable objects, like what?
Personal property.
Everything that's not land. Then that actually has to physically be movable. You could say this fridge isn't movable. It's pretty much stuck there, but it's movable doesn't necessarily mean you have to be able to move it. Right. Car is a movable object, Tommy could drive it, but anything that's not land. Anything that's not land is a movable object.
So it's like buildings?
No, buildings are fixed.
Okay.
Building is considered to be part of the land.
So it's the same thing as in current accounting?
Probably. Not definitely, but probably. Okay, so anyway, so the metaltalim here we're talking about include also loans, right? Money, mm-hmm. Money is obviously a movable good, right? So money that's moved from A to B, a loan, is also metaltalim. Gemara likes to stick with loans because it's easy to understand. You don't have to worry about everything else. Chodu metaltalim v'kanu miyado. If somebody admitted to metaltalim, here we're using metatalin because we're going to bring the opposite of the other case of karaka, land. And we're going to see the difference between the two. But in the case of movable objects, where they Kanu Miyato, they made a Kenyan. Kotvim, he can write, right? We learned that before. That was the same first thing that we learned in this studio. Right, that you can write a note where you made a Kenyan on movable items such as a loan. Imlab, En Kotvim, but he didn't, if not, meaning if he didn't make the Kenyan, En Kotvim, we don't write. No, it's not a Chiddush, we learned that before. But why are we saying that again? Only for the next bit. To compare it with Makar Ka'e, which is land. So in the case of land, Velo Kanu Miyado, where you didn't make a Kenyan, my, is land different? That's a question the Gemara wants to know. Okay, I hear you that you can't write a note on movable properties without a Kenyan, but what about on land? Can you write a note without a Kenyan? So we've got Machoket. Amemra Amar Ein Kotvin, Marzutra Amar Kotvin. Amemra says you don't, and Marzutra says you do. Why? Ah, okay, Yofi. What's the difference in land? So why does Marzutra say in land you can? So there's a difference between land and metaltalin. What's the difference? So it says like this. When you're transferring land, there is no transfer of physical possession. You don't pick up the land. Right? The land isn't going anywhere. Right? Staying in one place. But when you do a transaction with some metaltalin, so it moves. It's now in your possession. It's going from my possession to your possession. Right? So that's your movement. So when you write a note, he says, the note has to record the transaction. He says, in the case of land, just because somebody agreed that land belongs to you, you said, yeah, it does. So at that point, the land transferred because there's no other transfer that you don't need to do, and you're not picking up the land and moving it. So he says, in that case, you can write a note. Because you're just recording what actually happened. Because when the person agreed that it belonged to the other person, so it actually now belongs to him, it moved, so to speak. It moved ownership. Because you didn't need to physically transfer it or pick it up, do anything with it. Right? They didn't need an additional kinyan. But with the Taltalin, if I say, yeah, that my watch, it actually belongs to you. But I'm holding it. So it's not actually transferred ownership yet, so it's not a record of the transfer. I'm trying to create a transfer by writing the document. The document is the means of transfer. Now I'm actually creating the transaction by writing that document because the thing hasn't moved from my possession. So the document is now serving a different purpose. But in the case of land, it's not creating a transaction, it's simply recording the transaction. Because the land itself doesn't need to move. That makes sense. Yeah? No? Okay.
Wouldn't it be reversed during Yovel?
Would it be reversed during Yovel? Yeah. Should be.
So basically it's not permanent.
Nothing. No land transfer is permanent. No. Okay, Tov. So that's why Marzutra says that you can write a note. But halacha kotvin, and hilchata, the halacha is that we do write it. We do go by Marzutra. In the case of land, we do allow witnesses to write a note, even if no kinyan has been performed. But in the case of the Taltalin, we don't. Tov, that's the law on that. Ravina ikla de maharia. The Dam Haraya. Top. Ravina arrived in a place called Dam Haraya. Amale Rav Dimi, Bar Rav Huna, Midam Haraya, the Ravina. Rav Dimi Bar Rav Huna, who lived there in Dam Haraya, said to Ravina. Why we have to know where he lived, I'm not sure. But that's where he lived. Metaltale V'itnu Beinayu. What's the case of metaltalin? Be'inu benayhu, and they're already in his possession. So we said in the case of land, that land moves over automatically. And therefore, when you're writing the note, you're just recording the fact. And therefore, we allow you to write the note because you're not creating the transaction because it's already theoretically moved into the new ownership. In the case of Metatalin, if I'm still holding on to it, then you can't write a note. But what happens in the case of it's already been transferred over to you? It's now in your possession, the Metatalin. So it doesn't require any further transfer. Right?
In possession of who?
Of the party who he's saying it belongs to. So if...
So you're saying that the loan has been repaid?
The loan has been repaid, yes. If he admits the loan has been repaid, can he write a note recording that? Does that make sense? Sounds correct. Let's have a look. No. Sorry, it's not what it means. Explained that wrong. Actually, he's talking about that still in his possession means he hasn't actually given it up. What's he talking about? So he's saying like this. In the case of Metatalin, the reason why you couldn't write the note in the previous sugya was because it might have been given up to somebody else. Someone else might actually be in possession. And you can't write a note taking the possession from someone else. You could write a note taking the possession from guy A to guy B. But if this possession was in the hands of a third party, then the note wouldn't help. You couldn't, so to speak, take it from his hands. It's already into the hands of a third party. So now the Gemara is saying, but what happens if it's still in his possession? Meaning it's still in the possession of the first party, so he can give it up. I think that's what it is. I think you could probably understand this sugya in two ways. But this is the way that Art Scroll is following. Let's see, Rashi. Okay. God bin the Hakeva Odile Bide Kavaina So, according to the explanation over here, the way to understand it is, he's asking him, in the case of Metatalin, that haven't left the possession, right, he hasn't spent the money, he hasn't given the item to a third party, can they write a note now?
So they're talking about the debtor.
Can the debtor, yes, the one who has to give it up, pay it back. Can they write a note? Amale, he said to them, to him, Ravina said to Rav Dimi, Kimakarke Damu, is same as land. The answer is yes. If he still has it in his possession, he can write a note. Ravashi Amar, Kevan de Mahasre Guvanaya Guvaina. No. Since it lacks collection, no. Ravashi disagrees and says, no, you can't write a note. Why not? Because it still needs to be collected, right? It still needs to be moved back into the hands of the first party, Larry explained at the beginning, right? It needs to transfer. And because it's lacking that, the note that the witnesses now want to write is not a record of ownership. It's a prima facie transfer of the document itself, the collection, and it can't move the property. So the fact that the property still needs to be moved means that Ashi says you can't write a note on it without the consent of the debtor. Top. Hahi odita dolahava katuvba. It was this note on which was not written on it. What was omitted on it? The statement, Amar lana kitvu v'chitmu v'habule. He said to us, meaning the debtor, write it and sign it and give it to him. So the note itself is apparently says, we hereby witness that Plony, on such and such a date, at such and such a place, Plony said to Plony, I owe you this money, and we hereby witnessed it as true. And then at the end of that, they're meant to write, and the debtor, Plony, told us to write this note and to give it to him, and to give it to the creditor. Right? So they should write that at the end, in order to prove the fact that the debtor actually wanted it drawn up, because otherwise we don't know. Right? We've got this whole argument about whether the debtor agreed to it or not, whether we have to imply that he agreed to it, maybe because it was in the presence of witnesses, he did a kinyan, it was serious, it wasn't serious, he was joking, he wasn't joking. Right? But if they wrote and the debtor told us to do this, then there's no argument, unless it's a forgery and they were lying. But on the basis that we don't dispute that bit, it's important to say on the note that the debtor told us to do it. So what happens if you have a note that doesn't have that on it? Do you assume that it was made with the debtor's agreement, or you assume that he didn't agree it and that's why they didn't write it? Abai v'Rava, the Amrei Tavehu. So Abai and Rava both said about it, Hainu d'Reish Lakish. This is what Reish Lakish said, the Marish Lakish. Chazaka ein ha'edim chotmin al hashtar ela im ken na'ase gadol. That we have a chazaka. What's a chazaka? Chazaka? A chazaka. What's a chazaka?
Not custom.
It can be, but what's the word? The 3 years is a type of a chazaka, for sure. But what does a chazaka, generally speaking, a chazaka means?
It's assumed that something happened.
Yofi. It's an assumption. It's a legal assumption. Legal assumption that something happened. Usually a legal assumption of ownership. Usually we're talking about ownership. Chazaka over ownership, usually, but not always. So it's a legal assumption of ownership usually, but otherwise it's just an assumption of what. So here we have a hazaka, legal assumption, ein edim chot min ashtar, that witnesses don't sign on a document elen ken nase gadol, unless he was a gadol. He was
over bar mitzvah.
Yeah, he was old enough. Meaning, what's going on here? We're talking about a completely different case here. Reish Lakish is not talking about this case at all. We're just using this Reish Lakish as an example. Reish Lakish says, if you have a case where a witness has signed on the document, and they come to court, and there's an argument whether or not the guy who was in the transaction, one of the principals, was actually over bar mitzvah or not, was old enough, right? Because if you're not old enough, you can't make a transaction. Can't make a transaction with a kid under bar mitzvah. This doesn't hold. 10-year-old sells you his bicycle. It's not a good deal. Right? He sells you his bicycle for 20 shekel. Can't go to court and say, well, he sold it. But if he's 13 years old in one day, and he sold you his bicycle for 20 shekel, then that's fine. That's binding. So what happens if you have a document that says, Plonny Jr. sold me his bicycle? It doesn't say how old he was in the document. It just says, Plonny Jr. sold me his bicycle. So they come to court. And Plonny Jr. is sitting there in the dock, and he's now 14 years old. It's taken a while for the thing to come to court. So there's a dispute. When did he sign? Was he old enough at the time he made the acquisition? So there's a hazaka, Reisha Ki says. We have a hazaka, a legal presumption, which means that it holds unless evidence to the contrary. Hazaka doesn't mean it's binding. It just means that in the absence of any other evidence, we go with the hazaka. So we have a hazaka which says witnesses don't sign on a document unless they know that the person they're signing about is overage. They just wouldn't do it. If you see a kid in front of you who's selling his bicycle for 20 shekels and he says, come, sit and write witness this, and I want you to write a note that I actually sold it for 20 shekels, whatever it is. So witnesses don't agree to sign on the document unless they're sure how old he is. Right? They're not that dumb. You can have an assumption. It may not be true. It could be in some case you didn't realize he looked older than he was, or they weren't thinking, they didn't know. But most cases, the hazaka. The hazaka is that we trust that no witness would sign a document if he thought the kid was underage. It's a hazaka. It's not foolproof. We could have evidence to the contrary. But the hazaka is that that wouldn't happen. So, Abai and Rava cite this case of Reish Lakish being old enough in answer to the question of what happens if you found a document which didn't have the words and he told us to write it and sign it and hand it over to the other guy. Right? If that was missing, what do we do? So now we have Reish Lakish. What does Reish Lakish tell us that we do? How does that help answer this question? Yes, no, or no help at all?
Well, assuming that you're using an example for underage, then what about the other three criteria, namely the person's not mentally competent, a slave,
or a woman.
Or a woman.
Right? So you would assume the same. Meaning, if Reish Lakish says you assume you assume that the witnesses know what they're doing to an extent, meaning they've covered the basics. They might not know everything. For example, they don't know if it's stolen, they don't know if it's really his, right? So they don't know everything. But they know the basics. When they don't sign on a document unless they check out the basics, that he's not a woman, a slave, or underage, or mentally incompetent. So according to that, that's what we're learning from Reish Lakish, that witnesses do cover the basics. And therefore, when we come to the question of what about a document that we find that didn't have the paragraph at the end of it saying, and he told us to write it and to hand it over and to sign it, if it doesn't contain that paragraph, what do we assume? We assume it's good or we assume it's not good?
Well, assuming that they know the basics, then isn't this part of the basics?
Okay, that would be the logic, and therefore,
if it's not there, then it's not a valid document.
You could say that way. The Gemara doesn't agree with you. The Gemara takes the reasoning the other way. Gemara takes the reasoning that witnesses don't sign unless they know that it's good. Right? That's the learning from Reish Lakish. They don't sign on the document unless they know that this document's going to be valid. There's no point signing on it if it's a 10-year-old. Oh, so if they did sign on it, must be that they were happy. Therefore, in the case of this document, which is missing the paragraph, it's been signed.
Oh,
it's missing the paragraph.
Okay. So it's already been signed.
But yeah, if it's not been signed, then there's no question. It's just a dumb document. Right? You need to have a document signed. But they read the document. It's got two signatures on the bottom. But it's missing a paragraph which says, and he told us to write this and sign it and hand it over. It's missing that paragraph. So the Gemara says, we learn from Reish Lakish that witnesses don't sign a document unless they're comfortable that it's valid. So therefore, we imply from here that even if it's missing a statement on the document, that it's still okay. The witnesses wouldn't have signed it if the debtor hadn't told them to do it. That's what he wants to learn out, according to the Gemara. You might find that that you have Gaonim or Achronim or Rishonim that go with you and your explanation. I'm not saying that couldn't be true. Maybe.
What does Rashi say, if anything?
On that part? Yeah, Rashi says, since Achanami came under the Shanim Lama Zikatve, Ella Vershoto Vadai Yuhu Amar, says for sure we understand that he was instructed to, they were instructed to hand it over.
Right, but it says later on that they acquired him.
The scribes
of the bias court.
Okay.
And they were familiar with this requirement.
Okay, so.
Well, if it's not there.
Not what?
And if the paragraph is not there and they're familiar with the requirements to put it in, then what's going on?
Why didn't they put it in? They just forgot.
Doesn't make sense because they're familiar with the requirement.
So that's proof. That's evidence. The fact that they're familiar with the requirement means that they know not to agree, not to sign a document if that didn't, meaning it's a requirement not in the document, it's a requirement that was actually there in the case. They know that the debtor has to agree, so they wouldn't have signed it unless he agreed. They didn't write it in the document, they forgot that it needs to be written in. When it says they were familiar with the requirement is not to write it in, the requirement is that this took place. There was a requirement the debtor agreed it. The fact that it was written in the document is only the record. It's not crucial. So what it's saying is that they were familiar. Witnesses are familiar with the requirement that you need a debtor to agree. And therefore, they wouldn't sign the document if that hadn't have taken place. Let's get to that bit now. What's he saying? Matzkifla, although here, I'm saying it the other way, but you're right, you're agreeing that you're going with the God. I'm arguing it both ways, which is good. I argue the other way. The Gemara says, my kid, they argued it. Well, let's see, actually, because we'll get to the end of this subject. My kid, la Rab Papi, Vitmeir Rab Huna. So it was Rab Papi argued, or some say Rab Huna, Bereh to Rab Yeshua, who was the son of Rab Yeshua. Mi'i kamide de anan lo yidina. Is there any law which we do not know? The safre de ke deve dina yade, and the court scribes do know. Right, so he's saying here that they might not know. That no, I think my comment was good. She'elin hu le safre de abai viyade, le safre de rabbi viyade, they asked the scribes in Abai's court and they were familiar, and they asked the scribes in Rabbi's court and they were also familiar, so it's true that they did know, so it does support it. They wanted to say that maybe they didn't know. That was the question of the Gemara here. Maybe scribes don't know that you need to have the debtor's approval, and therefore when they wrote the document they missed it out because they just weren't aware that they needed that requirement, and therefore they left it out because it never happened. But we're learning here, no, they know it's a requirement and they wouldn't have signed unless it happened. The fact that they didn't write it is not crucial. Okay. Next, bottom of the page. Ahi Odita Dahava Katavve. Right, we had another note on which was written on it. Dochwan Pitzgame. The record of these words, Rechol Lishane Devedina, and all other wording according to the wording of the court. Well, I have a kataf, but it didn't have written on it. But motav talata havena v'chad letohi. There were a quorum of three, and one is no longer alive. So, what's the case? So, we have a document on which two people, two signatures are on it, but it's got wording as if it's wording of a court. Now, we know that a court, Beit Din, has three members. And if the court is making a statement, making a judgment, writing a note, if you like, writing a document, then all three members of the court are going to sign on it. So now we've got a document that's only got two signatures on it. How do we understand it? Do we understand that actually it was only two witnesses? Or we understand that it was a court and there were three people on the court, but one of them must have died before they actually wrote up the document, meaning the three members validly judged the event, but then one died before they got to write up the note, because they don't write it immediately. You've got to find a scribe, and you've got to find some paper and some pen and an ink. Right? It takes a long time. Right? In the meantime, he died, so he couldn't sign on it.
What about the third example?
What?
An insolent court of two judges.
Yeah, well, that's a possibility. The Gemara has to, before it gets to the other possibilities, has to think about what the basic possibility is. There's two options. It was a court of three, because it's written in the format of a court. We hereby sat in judgment, and we saw that A. Plony said to Plony that, and we decided that in fact the money does belong to whatever, the language of a court. But only two signatures. Or maybe they were just two witnesses. Two witnesses are writing that they saw this happen, but they just used the language of a court for some reason. So what is it? So how do we understand it? Savar Ravina Lameira. Ravina thought to say, Hainu Duresh Lakish. This we can follow Resh Lakish. Meaning what? Resh Lakish said, witnesses don't sign a document unless they know it's going to be valid. Right? Unless they know that it's covered. They won't not signing on it if they don't know what they're talking about. If I don't know how the game works, I don't know what I'm signing, I'm not going to sign on it. Right? So they only sign as a hazaka. But the hazaka is that everything's good. Meaning that, you're right, according to that first opinion, if we go with Resh Lakish, then this document is good, even though it's only been signed by two, and it should have been signed by three because it sounds like a court. We say that these two wouldn't have signed a mistaken document because they know what they're talking about. Therefore, it must be that one of the guys died. Do you say that? Amale Rav Natan Ba'ami. Rav Natan Ba'ami says, Hachi Amrina Mishmer de Rava. This is what I heard in the name of Rava. Kol ki hai gavna, anything like this, Hashinan Levet Din Toim. We are concerned, we suspect that maybe it was an errant court. There was only two signatures on a court document. Maybe there was only two guys in the court. It's not a proper court.
That's what I was saying.
Amar Rav Nachman Bar Rav Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, Ikatav Va Beidina. If it was written on it, Beidina, the court, Tulot Sarich. Right? We don't need to worry about it, because the word Beidina, Beit Din, everybody knows means three. No one's going to make a mistake and think that Beit Din, Beidina, can be done with less than three. But it doesn't have the word Beidina on it. Then you can assume, or you can be concerned, that maybe two guys decided they were going to decide the case themselves, and therefore it wouldn't be taken as valid. But Dimwa Beit Din, Chatzofu, but maybe, like you say, Rav Yaakov, even if it had the words Beit Din on it, we can't rely on it, because there are those who think that you can have a Beit Din of two, even though it's an insolent court, it's a Beit Din Chatzur? Right? Like we learned, Damashmo, like we learned at the beginning of the Masechet, Shnan Shadanu Dinei Din. Right? Two people that judged, their judgment is valid, right? It's a din. Even though we require La Tchila, Beit Din of three, according to Shmuel, not everyone agrees with Shmuel, but according to Shmuel, if you had two people in a Beit Din, that would be enough. Elash and Ekru Beit Din Chatzuf, just the fact that he's called a Beit Din Chatzuf, it's insolent, right?
But if someone's an expert judge,
yes,
he can be, you wouldn't need three, if I remember right?
Yeah, he can be by himself.
By himself, if he's an expert.
Yeah. But he wouldn't be called a Beit Din. I don't think. The Katav Bey, Beidina, Drabana Ashi. What about if the court had, if the document had written on it, the Beit Din of Rav Ashi? Rav Ashi was the main posek of the generation, and he was had the main Beit Din. So if it had the Beit Din, if it was written on it, this is was heard in the Beit Din, in one of the Beit Dins, one of the courtrooms of Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi would have a big court for many little small courtrooms. But if it was under his Beit Din, so to speak, then for sure they wouldn't have had a two-man Chatzuf Beit Din. Rav Ashi would never have allowed that. So what happens there, if you have a document that says it was in the court of Rav Ashi and there was only two guys signed on it, how do you understand that then? But Dilma Rabbanan, Devei Rav Ashi, Kishmuel Savrelehi, but maybe you could say, even the Rabbanan, those judging in the court of Rav Ashi, might hold by Shmuel. Right? You're allowed to hold by Shmuel. Right? It's not the only opinion, but Shmuel said it's allowed. Dichtiv bo, Mumalan Rabbanan Ashi. And if it had on it written Va'amalan Rabbana Ashi, and Rav Ashi told us to do this, right? Meaning, then for sure Rav Ashi would not have agreed with the two-man Beit Din. So if it had written on it and Rav Ashi agreed to this, then for sure we can understand that it's okay, because for sure it couldn't have been, it wouldn't have been a two-man Beit Din, but it would have been a three-man Beit Din. Nafka Mina, there's no Nafka Mina, because even a two-man Beit Din we allow, it's Chatzuf, but we allow the Din, we allow the judgment. But in the case where it had written on it, Rav Ashi told us, then for sure it must have been a valid Beit Din of three, and therefore document is good to rely on. Tough. Ah, tough. No, it does have an Nafka Mina, because even if, because the halacha doesn't follow Shmuel, so if it was the case that it was two judges who were held by Shmuel and they had a two-man Beit Din, because the halacha doesn't follow him, it means that the document that they drew up as a result of that Beit Din is not valid. It wouldn't be good evidence to transfer the debt, unless it was a proper three-man Beit Din. Thank you, gentlemen. Good morning.